All right, and welcome everyone to another Wednesday evening here on peoplesinternetradio.com. I am Stephen Roberts, and this is Cancel the Cabal. Tonight, I have a very, very special guest on. He's a military whistleblower. I'm going to bring up his bio here real quick. Second Lieutenant Scott Bennett and Swiss banker whistleblower Brad Birkenfeld co-authored a letter to General James Mattis, commander of the U.S. Central Command, exposing the Union Bank of Switzerland and Swiss Bank connected to terrorist finance networks, as well as the cover-up of his intelligence by defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton, for which Scott Bennett was a terror threat finance analyst. Emmer Snowden reported that Brad Birkenfeld, was a Swiss banker whom the U.S. intelligence agency CIA had ensnared in a trumped-up DUI charge in order to pressure him into industrial espionage. 1 month after submitting this letter, Brad Birkenfeld received a $104 million settlement in return for his silence about how Attorney General Eric Holder and Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer worked for Covington and Burling and represented USB in private practice, how USB Chairman Robert Wolf became a financial bundler for President Barack Obama, and how Senator Carl Levin, Senator of my state of Michigan here, and Senator John McCain of Arizona, and the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations refused to allow Mr. Birkenfeld to provide the terrorist finance material to the U.S. military, specifically the terrorist threat finance operations at U.S. Central Command. Second Lieutenant Bennett's report to the U.S. Congress, the military, and the media have been ignored, covered up, and Bennett persecuted for writing them. The failure or intentional refusal to inform military threat finance operations had led to the deaths and maimings of thousands of military service members for failing to disrupt the Swiss bank financing. American citizens curious or outraged by this should contact their members of Congress. To date, the only person in Congress to respond to his letter has been Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Seems truth is always stranger than fiction. It's not only stranger than fiction, but far more terrifying for some. Time will tell. Welcome to the show, Scott Bennett.
Thank you, Stephen. Good to be with
you. Oh, you are very welcome to be on the show. You have quite a story, as some others that have been like you, some others that have a conscience. I guess we should go over from the beginning a little bit about your story, Scott.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I didn't want it. Didn't try and set this story in motion. It just sort of happened to me. You may want to turn your mic down because I'm getting a little bit of back feet. But
my
story, yeah, that's better. My story started back when I joined Booz Allen Hamilton from the Bush administration. I had been working in the Bush administration from 2003 to 2008. I jumped into Booz Allen Hamilton because of my interest and background in psychological operations. And to make a long story short, I had been positioned as liaison officer in some of the top agencies in counterterrorism, the State Department coordinator for counterterrorism under General Del Daley, who had previously been commander of Joint Special Operations Command. I was the liaison officer to Special Operations Command Joint Information Operations Center at the Pentagon, in which we were, you know, I won't go anything classified or discuss anything that was of a secrecy dimension, but my job was to analyze and produce psychological operations material for all military and State Department operations and such. And then I was also given a direct commission in the Army to apply my academic scholarly background and experience in the interagency with the Bush administration applied in the military. So I was given a direct commission, which is usually given to doctors and lawyers or people with advanced degrees. And I went into military training and went through all of the officer commissioning process. And then after that, had been offered a position by Dove Zakheim at U.S. Central Command at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida. And Dov Zakheim, as everyone probably knows who pays attention to your show and others, was the comptroller at the Pentagon during the September 10th, 2001 Rumsfeld discussion of $2.3 trillion that went missing.
Missing from the Pentagon's books, yes.
Yeah. So Dov Zakheim had his fingers all over that. He then moved over to Booz Allen Hamilton after the 9/11 attacks. I think it was 2004. And became the money man for terrorist financing and was down at MacDill in that capacity. So he ran the Booz Allen Hamilton team and had asked me to join his team. And I did. I went down to U.S. Central Command. And for the next 5 or 6 months, I was doing just terrorist analysis, looking at all the banks and hawalas and terrorist funding streams and money laundering operations. And again, I never go into anything technical or classified that may be, you know, in any way secret. But all that is public knowledge. All that is in the court documents, which I've got in the Middle District of Tampa Court, because there was a criminal charge that later popped up that is part of this story. That was part of this tremendous cover up that I discovered. And I worked down in uncovering a lot of terrorist financing sources and banks and all sorts of shenanigans and funny business. And I began authoring reports and giving briefings, identifying problems that I saw and contractor fraud and things that were in need of attention. And shortly after I started making a lot of noise, I was pulled off of the assignment. I was arrested at base front gate, pulled out of my car at gunpoint. And I thought it was all a test at the time. And because I was supposed to be a military officer going to be deployed. So they often say you're going to be put through testing and you're going to be surprised. And this is going to be part of your training to make sure that you can hack any sort of deep cover operations that you may be called to do. So I thought all this was part of the game, part of the test, part of the experience. But I found out later that it wasn't, that it was a setup, that I had been identified and targeted for removal because of the intel and the briefings that I was given, which was because it was conflicting with a lot of Booz Allen and military financial interests. So I was arrested, pulled off base. There's a whole drama associated with what they put me through and torturing me for about 8-10 hours in a military jail cell. And about 9 months later, when I returned to DC and I laid low and I was quiet, I hired attorneys because they had accused me of filling out my housing form wrong, and I said, well, all this was done by the military, by my battalion. I didn't do any of this. I was sent down here to do a job, and that's what I've been doing. And I didn't really put it together that it was because of the job I was doing and the depth I was doing it at, and I should say probably the exceptional way I was doing it, which was all about exposing corruption, that they didn't want that exposed, and they came down on me. But they had indicted me 9 months later on this housing form they said had been technically a false statement. And I said, well, there's no false statement. You can bring the military in and the military can address it. And the military never did. They were somehow, in the first time in the history of the United States, able to bring this military charge, this military issue, and prosecute it in a civilian court, which anyone who knows anything about the law knows it's a violation of the Constitution. It's a violation of the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It's a violation of jurisdiction. It's a violation of state law because you're making it a federal crime on state Florida land. And then you're also violating the military by stepping onto a military base, claiming judicial jurisdiction over a military officer. All sorts of weird stuff. They broke and bent and twisted to try and make this prosecution happen. And again, I thought it was part of a test. I went through this civilian trial, and the next thing I know, they find me guilty of this paperwork error, and they throw me immediately in prison. And for 5 months, I'm in prison in a Florida court. And then I show up and I fired my first attorneys. And I said, this is a complete sham. I need a new trial. I need military attorneys down here. They never gave me any military representation. And I went in front of the judge and I said, this is a total misunderstanding. I need to be represented. I need to outreach and clarify all this. Nothing has been the way it's presented. And the judge basically didn't want to hear anything I had to say for whatever reason. And instead of giving me my sentence of 0 to 7 months, she gave me an enhancement to 36 months. And sent me up to Pennsylvania, where I ran into the Swiss banker Brad Birkenfeld, who was the Swiss banker who had come over to the Justice Department a year or two prior and disclosed all sorts of Swiss banking information and terrorist finance accounts and weird things that were going on within the Swiss banking community that has subsequently come out in the mainstream media ever since. So I went up to Pennsylvania and I ran into Brad Birkenfeld, and over 6 months, he and I went over all these documents, and it was, you know, something that we couldn't make up. I didn't quite know what to make of it. He didn't know what to make of it, but it was, in my opinion, just divine intervention and God sort of confounding the wise with the things of, you know, the foolish, by bringing us together and exposing all this material. And we wrote letters to General James Mattis at U.S. Central Command, letters up to Congress and all sorts of military authorities, demanding a debriefing of Birkenfeld's material, my material when I was at CENTCOM, and asking for all of this to be exposed. And none of this was ever done. And it went silent, and Birkenfeld was paid off $104 million as sort of hush money to keep any of this from coming out. And for the last 2 years, I've been trying to get this out in the media and writing every congressman and senator under the sun. And it's slowly starting to come out now. And one of the miraculous things that just happened recently, which I have to give full credit to a gal who's a wonderful reporter, Sharon Rondeau, who identified that France is now calling Birkenfeld to testify on Swiss banking irregularities and all sorts of other things. So that's a very golden opportunity, because we've been fighting to get this in the American courts and the American media, and nothing's happened. Yeah. Now the French are taking this on. So I've made an immediate request to also appear in France and present this material to corroborate Birkenfeld's, because Birkenfeld's material and my material will expose both sides of the coin and give the French, who are the only ones asking about this because the U.S. aren't, the full information that they want about terrorist financing and Swiss banks and HSBC and Credit Suisse and Union Bank of Switzerland.
Do you think Birkenfeld is going to forego his big cash cow and testify?
Well, if he cares about American soldiers and the Constitution and French soldiers and European soldiers who fought and died in these wild escapades in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and all over the Middle East for the last 12 years, I think he'll do the right thing and come out and tell the whole story. I mean, he's got a powerful story, because he had come originally to Lanny Breuer and Eric Holder, who were the Department of Justice, the Attorney General and the Assistant Attorney General. He had come to them with material about Swiss banking shenanigans. And they, unbeknownst to him at the time, they worked for a law firm called Covington and Burling. And that firm represented Union Bank of Switzerland. So the law firm that represented represented UBS suddenly has the top law enforcement officials as alumni. And what happened as a result of having Lanny Breuer and Eric Holder as alumni of Covington and Burling, they don't prosecute UBS. They give them a token slap on the wrist, a 2% fine, and let them go on their merry way, and only take 4,000 of the 24,000 bank accounts that Birkenfeld had brought. So there are 20,000 bank accounts with multi-millions of dollars in them that have remained hidden and shell gamed, moved around and changed and combinations altered. And a lot of that money went directly into terrorist operations, terrorist hawalas and money laundering activities and CIA black budgets and Mossad black budgets and things that the American taxpayer doesn't know about. But all of that, you know, was what Birkenfeld brought.
Sure.
None of that was exposed. So it's hoped that this French analysis will invite him to discuss it, and then I'm all the stuff that I had discovered is unclassified, so it's very easy to present it to them too and hope that they can use it.
Absolutely. I have backed my microphone down a little bit. Is there a possibility you can turn your speakers down a little bit there? Keep that echo from coming in. I did want to mention, well, actually I wanted to tell you that metaphorically speaking, I don't really have a lot of respect for the military. As far as the people, now that's a different story. You know, you can't fault a person, a man or a woman, just because they are in a faulty system. I mentioned to you last night, or maybe I did, I'm not sure, but I've had in the past 7 professors, and 6 of them happen to be PhDs. They have all told me right on air that any academia that pursues conspiracy or even looks into them do not get government funding. You know, to put the foot on the other shoe, is that pretty much the same way in the military too? If you don't get along, you get attacked, you get reprimanded, and you get all kinds of hell brought upon you.
Well, that's absolutely true. That's one of the sad realities of the weakness and the cowardice of a lot of the military leadership that we've got today. They do not want any discussion whatsoever of the 9/11 attacks, the evidence, the scientific forensic analysis, which indicate clearly that it was not as the government has presented it. It was not a couple of planes bang into the World Trade Center towers and suddenly they naturally fall to the ground. Building 7, which wasn't even mentioned in the government analysis, suddenly falls to the ground in a perfect demolition.
First time in history.
Office fire.
First time in history, of course.
First time in the history, yeah.
All three buildings come down, yeah.
The cover-up and the lies are so obscene and so ridiculous. It's an indictment of the sad state of, I mean, the American psyche, the American population, the American country, for people not to step up and find this out and ask questions. There has been a remnant that have stood up, Barbara Honegger, Susan Lindauer, 9/11 architects and engineers, and all these groups that have formed over the past 10 years and have analyzed the evidence and presented it and put it on YouTube, put it out on the internet, and created this groundswell, the alternative media such as yourself, who have stood up and had conversations about this. And in those conversations, you walk away with the logic and the reason and the cold calculus that, yeah, something funny happened and it certainly wasn't what was presented. And when you begin to really look at it, you discover that it was a false flag operation. Who was responsible is another question, but you first have to start out with what happened. And after the what, then you link it back to, well, who would have done that? Whose fingerprints are all over that? What else do we know? Then you see
then you
the
have to look at
5
who
Israelis dancing
yeah.
on a truck. You see all sorts of Saudi connections and Saudi money and all these connections with the Bush administration and Dov Zakheim again, his name springs up, and Silverstein.
The Mossad, yeah.
All the Mossad, you know, a very strong Israeli connection. I mean, Booz Allen Hamilton was riddled with Mossad personnel. And, you know, you don't think about it at the time, but after you start doing all this research and discovering all this, you go, my God, the top contractor in the United States government, Booz Allen Hamilton, is riddled with Mossad. And Booz Allen Hamilton has an entire floor full of top secret documents that anybody can go into and take out and walk away with and who knows give it to who. That's something that's not even known. I started making those discoveries and I sent it in letters and reports as a military officer, illegally incarcerated against the Constitution, against the military code, but I'm still on mission and I'm still reporting as a military officer up my chain of command. And I'm reporting it to Congress too, saying, dear Congressman Carl Levin, John Boehner, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Howard Buck McKeon, Mike Rogers, Pat Leahy, Rand Paul, about 150, 200 congressmen and senators, writing them consistently for 2 years. I'm a U.S. military officer. I'm illegally incarcerated, illegally charged. And in addition to that, I've discovered Swiss banking irregularities and intelligence that you need to utilize as part of our war mission. Please contact me to debrief me for these materials. I wasn't an ice cream man. I wasn't a car mechanic. I was a top secret SCI clarified defense contractor and military officer who had worked in the highest levels of counterterrorism and in the military. If anybody deserved an audience, if anybody deserved to be contacted and debriefed, it was me. And not one person in the military, not one person in the media, not one person in Congress ever debriefed me. The only time the media had contacted me was when they made an error and thought they were going to do a story on a Booz Allen Hamilton contractor. And they were going to come and target me and try and turn it into a story of, well, here's Bennett, he's in jail, and here's another example of a Snowden character. And Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger, Michael Isikoff was of NBC News and Tom Hamburger was of the Washington Post. They came up to Pennsylvania and interviewed me for 2 hours. And what they got was entirely different than what they expected. They walked into a room and I said, here is all the documentation that exposes Swiss bank accounts funding terrorism and the complete cover-up by the U.S. Congress and the U.S. military. Go forth and tell the American people. Write about this. This expands upon the Snowden material. Snowden was connected to Birkenfeld. Snowden was in Geneva, Switzerland, the time the CIA came after Birkenfeld and got him in a DUI and tried to turn him into an intelligence asset for industrial economic Swiss banking espionage. Report that. And they never reported a single word and never returned any of the documents that I gave them. So that's a tell right there.
Did you have copies of the documents?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course I did. Okay. I had copies of everything that Birkenfeld gave me, everything that I sent, and I dispersed it throughout a variety of channels to make sure if anything ever happened to me, everything would be eventually would be released anyway.
Even yes. If it was, you know, I spoke to you for about 45 minutes last night, Scott, and introduced you to a name, Frank Gregory Ford. He's been on my show countless times, many, many times, probably at least, I don't know, 30 or so on all of my networks in the last year and a half. His story just reeks of sameness, just like yours does. He was renditioned out of Iraq. I believe he said it was like 2003 or 2004, just after he found the WMDs. And he was actually a MD. He is a doctor that was commissioned to patch up the prisoners over there at Abu Ghraib. And he started to scream and shout and jump up and down about all of the atrocities that actually went on over there. And that's when he was renditioned. So I guess he is in the middle of California or Northern California, one or the other. He's actually looking for a court fight. He wants it to go to court. Are you looking for the same thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, my court fight is still ongoing. I expect to be back in the courtroom in the next few months to challenge everything as unconstitutional and as a violation of the military, as well as contractor fraud and prosecutorial misconduct. I mean, the shenanigans they got away with at the time is absolutely obscene. I mean, they deny me all military counsel. I don't get a military lawyer. They break the law by trying me as a civilian for duties that I was performing as a military officer. It's like saying, you know, I show up at a military shooting range in uniform and shoot my weapon, and suddenly the Justice Department jumps in and gives me a ticket for not having that weapon registered. And it's like, wait a minute. First of all, you don't have jurisdiction to even come on here and tell me anything. The military does. The military asked me to do this. The military told me to do this. If there's a problem, the military will handle it. And everything is within their jurisdiction. When I sign my name on the dotted line on the oath of office, the oath as a military officer, it's to serve as a military officer protecting the Constitution and performing my duties. But what goes hand in hand with that is that the military gives me the authority to do these things. And by allowing the Justice Department, the political arm of Obama, Eric Holder and Lanny Breuer to step in and prosecute me, they're prosecuting every military person since 1776.
Yeah, they're I think maybe they're trying to set a precedence here, but
they are.
You know, I wanted to mention to a lot of people, a lot of us have seen these movies or even television shows in the last 20 plus years, 20, 25, 30 years. Whenever somebody in the military in a movie or a show gets in trouble, it's always a military court that handles the situation. It's there have been these cop and detective shows all over American entertainment, and they've always had the same type of situation. Whenever somebody in the military gets in trouble, it's the military comes in and takes over the entire case, and they take care of that situation themselves. But here, seemingly they seem to want to set a precedent. Do you think?
They do. They want to set a precedent where they can use the Justice Department to step in and make a crime, make a federal crime, something that the military has complete ownership and jurisdiction over. But they're going to step in and take it out of the military hands and make it a crime so that they can prosecute the person under federal law with federal prosecutors. Now, the military should have jumped in and stopped it. They should have said, no, you can't do that. You can't prosecute him. Only we can. And if they wanted to, they could have tried. Of course, it would have been laughed out of court, because every military person would have said, there's no case here. That's a paperwork issue, but there's no crime. However, the precedent is they got away with coming in, taking it out of the military's hands, even though the military gave it to them, which they're to blame for, and the military committed fraud on the court by making patently false statements. A guy named Lieutenant Colonel Joel Droba lied to the court by claiming he was my commander at the time that I was down on base, and he wasn't. And that never came out until much later. Now all of this is going to be put back into the court to say, Judge, all these people lied to you, and all this material that you thought was one way is actually totally the opposite. Why did this case even come together? Well, you either know about it or you don't know about it. If you don't know, it's because of all this Swiss banking, terrorist finance, reports and briefings and everything that I was doing at U.S. Central Command. Instantly, because of all that, they dogpiled on me and invented this ridiculous charge of a paperwork housing error. So that is going to be brought back into the court. And part of the defense is the Justice Department have tried to use this to abuse their power and to gain power in the executive branch. And it violates the separation of powers clause. The separation of powers is that the courts and the Congress and the presidency all exist in equal balance. And you cannot have the presidency step in and take power away from the military's congressional mandate to manage itself. The president doesn't manage the military. The military manages itself based on the laws that Congress passes and empowers them with. Yes, the president can pass certain executive orders, but they have to be filtered through the congressional apparatus, the congressional precedents. And Congress, since 1776, has given the full authority to the military to manage itself. That includes people like me and what they charge me with. So on that precedent alone, I anticipate the whole thing being thrown out. And worse, I think a lot of these prosecutors in the Department of Justice who are responsible for this are going to be investigated. Let me share one other thing with you, Stephen, that should be of interest. When I think I told you yesterday, when you start to unravel and discover a lot of these shenanigans and funny business, I mean, all sorts of other things start to pop up. I discovered when I got out of prison out of Pennsylvania and came back to California, I was put into a halfway house, and I shouldn't have been, but they accidentally somehow got me up to this halfway house, which is usually reserved for people who've been in jail for 20, 30 years. But I got up there and I discovered that they were teaching a class, because they forced me to participate. They were teaching a class called Deep Black, and it was the history of the CIA illegal drug operations and assassination history of U.S. military, congressional, and media persons in partnership with Mossad. So the Department of Justice Bureau of Prisons is teaching this class to inmates called Deep Black, which describes illegal CIA activities in drug operations, drug laundering, Puerto Rico connections.
Well, that's a good thing, though, isn't it? Isn't that a good thing?
You couldn't make it up.
Yeah. Isn't that a good thing, though?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I knew about this all before in my professional life as military and contractor. I had access to all this stuff. But it struck me that the Department of Justice is teaching this to inmates in the interest of what can only be described as inculcating treason, inculcating rebellion and resentment and anger against the United States government, trying to foster hatred among men who are essentially hopeless to a large degree, who've been in jail for so long, they're just going to go back in the track of drugs or whatever. But you're teaching them that they're in jail because they ran afoul of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Certainly.
It's significant because I included that in my court documents in Florida. You're asking about, do I expect to go back in and fight? I do. And I've included in this fight language and motions which identify this class is being taught to inmates. I'm a prime example. Either the class is a lie and it's brainwashing and the court needs to investigate it, or it's true and the court needs to investigate it because it's exposing illegal and unconstitutional activities by the CIA. So either way, it gets on the record that there's illegal activities going on.
Well,
so you don't know what you run into.
It serves two purposes, Scott. Them doing that, the ultimate goal is to keep people in the military and government from talking to citizens, the regular people, because we are the ones that are oppressed. Government contractors and military are ultimately going to be the ones that are going to have to be the oppressors when the proverbial crap hits the fan.
Well, the only reason I started really coming out with this, I mean, it's been a long process. I started coming out with it when I was down at Central Command and in an official military defense contractor role. And then I was instantly shut down and put into prison. And I didn't know all the connections at the time. I just knew something was wrong. And then when I went to prison, I suddenly run into Joe Nocio, who was the Quest Communications president, who had been legally targeted by NSA and thrown in jail because he wouldn't release all of the Quest Communication personal data relating to his customers. I ran into Brad Birkenfeld, the Swiss banker who had 24,000 bank accounts of illegal money laundering, tax evasion, terrorist financing. And he brought all that to the Department of Justice and Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer. And then he went to Carl Levin and John McCain to the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, went to Charles Grassley and, I mean, Republicans and Democrats. And they prosecuted him with the very material that he gave them behind closed doors. That's the obscenity of these people. And then he comes to prison. And then I run into him. And there's a whole colorful host of characters that were there for political purposes, lawyers and doctors and stockbroker guys, hedge fund guys. One of the most intellectually astute center points in this country are at some of these federal prisons, because you have some brilliant minds that are there, and a lot of them don't belong there at all. They're in there for illegal political prosecution purposes. But Brad and I discovering each other, looking at all the WikiLeaks cables, seeing the Julian Assange material that Brad had sent in, which clearly showed the State Department under Hillary Clinton were targeting Brad for political prosecution, were targeting him in exchange for political expediency from the Swiss government, in exchange for treaties that were prosecuting him in exchange for sending Chinese Uyghurs from Guantanamo Bay over to Switzerland. And Brad was an American citizen who brought information to the American people to make them safe and to save the lives of American soldiers by saying, here's all the money that's going to buy the IEDs and the bullets and the bombs and the weapons that are being used against our soldiers and the soldiers of our European allies, by the way, Germany and France and Britain and every country in NATO that was in Afghanistan or Iraq. They've lost men because of the attacks of bad guys, and these bank accounts funded those attacks. And the sad thing is, some men wouldn't be alive today if they had acted and shut down some of those financial conduits, and they never did. And that's where they have blood on their hands. And that's why, as a military officer, I will not stop. I will not quit until I get this in front of every military, congressional, an American family to say, this is what I know. This is what I discovered. Here's what was not done. And they have blood on their hands. And I'm asking you to, contact your member of Congress, hold them to account, file legal action if you have grounds. If your son or daughter was killed, you've got a right. You've got standing to file a legal action in court. Contact the bank, the law firms in New York that are filing the lawsuit against the banks for funding terrorism. Step up and really make noise about this. Otherwise, you're going to consign yourself to living in a slave state. That's not even opening up the Pandora's box of the 9/11 discussion, the 9/11 materials that I came into much later. And as a military officer, I can say, you know, you're saying you don't have respect for a lot of the military. I understand that completely. I wouldn't have respect for anybody who wore the military uniform and doesn't, upon discovery of the 9/11 materials, doesn't instantly jump up and down with absolute disgust and rage because they've been fighting a war based on lies.
Lies, yeah. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to, Scott, that, you know, they went along with the official fairy tale of the U.S. government and 9/11. And then in the alternate media, the 9/11 lie started to come out, and they tried to personally debunk the 9/11 truth movement, and they just could not.
Yeah, that's the sad thing, is so many military guys are asleep in the matrix, and they're browbeaten and they're threatened and they're silenced as, oh, nobody believes the 9/11 nuts. They're all crazy. And anybody who believes that, you know, the planes didn't burn the metal inside the World Trade Centers and they just naturally bent and crumpled, anybody who believes that didn't happen is a raving lunatic. And then you start beginning to do the homework and you step back and you see the science and say, wait a minute, metal melts at 2800 degrees and this was only 800? Something's wrong.
It was instantaneously at 800. And then the office burnings on both the buildings, 1 and 2, were less than 400.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I sat down with Barbara Honegger, who's a brilliant lady, for about 4 or 5 hours, and we went over a lot of this material, and I'd seen her work, and no one has done a better job of the forensic analysis of the Pentagon attacks and the interviewing of, you know, the Black Army lady who walked in and turned her computer on, and then it blew up, and she walked out the hole, and there was no kerosene burning, her feet weren't burned, and she knew something was afoot. The Navy guys who were all killed in the skiff who were doing the auditing analysis of the missing money. The impossibility of a fighter pilot being able to fly the 757 on the trajectory that the Pentagon attack occurred. My dad was a fighter pilot. My uncle was an Air Force pilot. And every other pilot you've seen on these 9/11 analysis shows has said it is impossible for Hani Hanjer, who never even passed his pilot's training,
right,
to have flown that plane at that trajectory, at that speed, and not burn the grass and not destroy itself by hitting the light poles. And I lived in Washington. I know that whole part right over George Washington Parkway. And you walk away knowing that it was false. It was all a lie.
Yes.
But then you go, wait a minute, who benefited?
Exactly.
You know, I had a great talk with Sean Stone, and that was part of his big analysis. Who benefited from this? And the only beneficiary really was Israel being using the U.S. military might to step in and start chopping up and abusing and overturning the apple carts of these Muslim countries, turning them into small little, forest fires,
They
thought in error, perhaps, that you could sprinkle the fairy dust of democracy and capitalism and suddenly transform this barbarian, savage desert civilization, which has virtues, you know, by virtue of its raw, rustic character.
Yes.
But they are not German, British, French, Western civilized, Roman, Greco, Platonic thinkers. They are their own Muslim, edifice from the Crusades, and we can't substitute or change that.
Exactly.
But the neoconservatives thought that we could, and they thought very stupidly that they could.
With the PNAC report.
Chaos and bloodshed has resulted.
With the PNAC report, yeah. Also, who benefited on that particular day? We all know about the $2.3 trillion that Donald Rumsfeld come out on the 10th and said was missing from the Pentagon books. That more than likely went to black operations. Know that I think it's somewhere in the vicinity of 30 to 40% automatically goes into black operations. So why would they have to actually steal this $2.3 trillion? They get, I guess, an upwards of estimated 500 billion plus just in black operations alone. Just they are handed and given to them.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of funny business that have gone on with the banking accounts and the combinations. I mean, there's a lot of CIA money that was in Swiss bank accounts, and the combinations were changed so that money suddenly went missing because you could no longer access it. You know, it's like the movie Ghost, where they take all the money out and change the combination. You no longer can get into the account. They had done a lot of that with the Swiss bank CIA money. And you have CIA handlers who were treating this money that was official CIA black budget money as their own personal bank accounts.
Certainly.
They were stealing this money from, and all of that money is that belongs to the American taxpayer for a large extent. That's money that's being used for bad expenditures. Some of that money you've seen in Ukraine. They've used the Ukrainian money from CIA black budgets to facilitate a coup in Ukraine. And what's been the result of that? Bloodshed, chaos. We've destroyed the beauty of Ukraine. It's now a civil war, and we're on the brink of World War III with Russia because we're trying to push them into a corner and use NATO as an ever expanding force. And we're now targeting Syria. I mean, you can see the writing on the wall that you have a World War I scenario rapidly coming together, where you have one dead archduke and suddenly the whole European continent is aflame in war. I don't think Europeans are going to tolerate that. I think they sense that the U.S. has overplayed its card. It's bit off more than it can chew. And their loyalty really is to much more peace and stability. And Russia is their neighbor. We've got a whole ocean between us. We're not their neighbor. Yes, they can try and say, well, we were nice to them in World War II, and we built up the cities that we bombed into oblivion. But that's then. This is now. What have you done for me lately? The European is going to say. And
they get the Janet Jackson treatment, huh?
What's that?
They get the Janet Jackson treatment there, don't they?
Yeah.
What have you done for me lately? Lori, the website's administrator, Lori would like to know, I guess very quickly, I want to do about 20 more minutes here. Some of your best thoughts on 9/11 and some of the big characters. And she also wants to know if you've heard of Dr. Judy Wood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have heard of Judy Wood. Well, let me just say, the man who introduced me to all the 9/11 stuff, I God bless him, I love him, he's like an uncle to me, a guy I call Scarecrow. I won't say his name on the line because he likes to keep anonymous, but I had met him in Pennsylvania, and he said, Scott, let me share with you the truth of what this whole thing's about, because I had never looked into it. I'd never studied it. I had heard about it, but the PSYOP was so powerful and the threats were so palpable that you never exposed any of this and you never dug into it. And Scarecrow introduced me to 9/11. He introduced me to Judy Wood and the Barbara Honegger research and Susan Lindauer and the Twin Towers and the Pentagons and the planes and the missing people.
Building 7.
NASA, yeah. The NASA building where the people were supposedly offloaded. All the details of all that he introduced me to, and I started putting it together. I started studying it. And then when I got out of prison and came out, I started simultaneously doing the research in 9/11 while at the same time getting my material about Swiss banking and the cover-ups of Birkenfeld and such on dual paths. And you see the crossovers. Now suddenly you see the Dov Zakheim, Swiss banks, the financial shenanigans and the Solomon building and the Enron documentation and all sorts of other documentation that was in the Building 7, suddenly you see the crossover, you see the connections. And Kevin Barrett has done a lot of good work in that too. So I started coming to that through my friend who introduced me to it and then doing my research. And I was, the only thing that really saddened me was I was ignorant for so long that I didn't jump in and really discover it. But, you know, God opens our eyes and our own timing and for his own purposes. And I finally really opened my eyes and learned about this. And once you learn about it, the genie never goes back in the bottle.
No, it doesn't. You can't unsee anything.
Yeah. And honestly, this is something that really needs to be presented in the high school format. You should have a curriculum of alternative views. If you've got teachings on evolution with regards to creationism, then what's the antithesis or the opposite of the official government narrative of 9/11?
How about
all this alternative media information? Let's have a curriculum designed about that.
How about the junior college level, Scott?
Absolutely.
I've actually talked to two people. One of them's a college professor, and he has a friend down there at, I think, somewhere in Florida. I don't remember the university now, but he actually teaches conspiracy theory as a college curriculum. And another man named David Livingston, I've had on the show like three or four times now. He's an author. And there's a college up in Canada somewhere that actually teaches conspiracy.
Well, the only thing to always be careful of is we in the people who are just beginning to discover this, and I mean, I was a prime example. When I started to discover this and get into it, I was interested in one thing and one thing only, facts and truth that could be verified.
Yes.
I was, and the first thing that turned me off or that pissed me off and got my hair on end was when I started walking in or hearing or finding things that were so outlandish or that weren't backed up or weren't properly explained. And, and it just caused you to go, wait a minute, you're telling me Bigfoot was on the plane too? that ruins the whole story. Yeah. And we need to be cautious because we need to present to Americans very gently and respectfully, you know, here's what we do know. Here are the facts. Here's the science involved, and then move gradually beyond it so that we don't scare people off or scald them or cause them to pull back in like a turtle. Because again, the media and the politics, the congressmen and the military have all focused on the American taxpayer, the American person, the average citizen. They have focused on the American citizen to browbeat and intimidate and threaten and brand them as a social outcast if they even talk about the possibility of an alternative explanation to what happened on the September 11th attacks. And this has even happened in the churches. That's what's so obscene to me. And I'm that's another part of my fight, is to get into the churches to say, you know, when the my people suffer for lack of knowledge, or quote is when the wicked rule, the people mourn. When the righteous rule, the people rejoice. The churches have an obligation to set up ministry groups and studies and conversations about this material, because this indicates a false flag and a betrayal of epic proportions.
Of the truth.
Never
seen. Yeah, it does. I've got an explanation for that, Scott. A few years back, it also came out that there was a program called the Pastor Initiative Program. And what they were doing, they were spending about $8 billion a year to teach and allow pastors, priests, ministers, and stuff like that to dissuade their flock from entertaining conspiracy. I actually approached my pastor one time before he passed away and asked him if I could do presentations in the church. And he said, oh, no, we can't do anything like that because God's going to save us. Save us all.
Well, I've encountered the same thing. I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm also encouraged that you've experienced the same thing. It means we're on the right track.
Yeah.
That these churches are stopping the leaders of the congregation from standing up and leading and drawing truth to themselves and letting the members see it. Now, we don't pay attention to what the pastors say. We don't have allegiance to them. We have allegiance to God and Christ, and we are to be beacons of salt and light and let men come unto us. And yeah, you do it respectfully, but if you want to go into your church and rent out a room or just appear for coffee or hang out after services and generate a list of people to say, I'm going to teach a 9/11 class. I'm going to teach a class on whatever the material may be. If you're interested, it's going to be at 7 o'clock on Monday nights or whatever.
Well, I wouldn't say so much a 9/11 class, but I would say maybe try a truth related, class, expressing what the facts are, not just opinions, because, you know, everybody, opinions are like armpits. Everybody has one and, they all seem to stink.
But,
David has a question in the, chat room. Do you know of a man named Gordon Bowden? He has forensic documented proof of treason and fraud involving HSBC and much more. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Yeah, not off the top of my list. I may have them in my database because I've looked at the HSBC report. And what was interesting about that was Carl Levin in 2012 wrote the Senate hearing analysis. And I've got a copy of that. I think I may have sent it to you. If not, I can. Where Levin identifies the HSBC terrorist financing connections. And that was used by Matt Taibbi in his Rolling Stone article, Too Big to Fail. Now, there's two judgments here. When Levin wrote that report in July 2012, he never incorporated any of Birkenfeld's UBS material. And I didn't see that HSBC report till much, much later. I mean, a few months ago, in fact. I wrote Levin about all the UBS material and the connections Birkenfeld had. And Levin never incorporated anything, never responded to me, never responded to Birkenfeld, just completely tried to bury this. So here's the man in the Senate who's supposed to be writing the authoritative report on terrorist financing, and he does not even take into account anything that Birkenfeld and myself had presented about Swiss bank UBS funding terrorism. And then Matt Taibbi, who wrote the article in Rolling Stone, he also was given a copy of the Union Bank of Switzerland material, and he never responded. He never took any of this up. The only one who did was Michael Hastings. Now, I'll read you a quick letter that I sent to Michael Hastings with all the materials, and it was dated September 14th, 2012.
Before he died, huh?
Before he died. Yeah. And Michael Hastings, journalist, Rolling Stone, military whistleblowing report exposing wrongful prosecution of Army officer counterterrorism analyst by Justice Department for reporting the psychological warfare activities of the Islamic extremists against the U.S. and its Muslim allies for the use of Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal on Muslim lands. I would like your help exposing a story which I believe the American people will want to know about and which could win you the Pulitzer. Due to the uprising in Libya and Egypt and growing anti-American sentiment, I feel I would be betraying my oath as an officer if I remain silent. As an Army officer who worked multidimensionally in psychological warfare with U.S. Special Operations Command, Central Command, and the State Department Counterterrorism Coordinator, and was defense contractor for Booz Allen Hamilton, this information is pertinent. Before this, I worked for the George W. Bush administration. Goes on a little bit about that. While serving, I uncovered some serious bureaucratic failures and vulnerabilities within the military, CIA, FBI, and the Obama administration. I reported this to the Pentagon, certain members of Congress, my Army unit, and the White House. Soon after, I was prosecuted by the Justice Department on trumped-up charges. I have written the story, and I would like to share it with you. Your convenience, please keep confidential. And then I sent him some of the documentation. What was significant that he picked up on and looked at was that Brad Birkenfeld was paid $104 million on September 11th, 2012. That was the same day as Benghazi. So the same day Benghazi was being erected, Birkenfeld was quietly paid his hush money from CIA sources and Justice Department, the IRS. Now, the other thing about Birkenfeld that Hastings was looking into was the CIA had told Vanity Fair not to run a story on Birkenfeld and his Swiss banking terrorist finance connections. They had sent a text message to the Vanity Fair journalist while he was in the limousine with Brad, because Brad told me the whole story, saying, do not run the Birkenfeld story. Karzai is far worse, blah, blah, blah. Try to get him off track. So that was the first tell that CIA were trying to stop any and all discussion about Birkenfeld. Anyway, Michael Hastings had this material and much more and was beginning to look into it and connect the dots. He was familiar with me and PSYOP because he had done the story on McChrystal and the targeting of U.S. senators in Afghanistan using PSYOP officers, identifying vulnerabilities and personality traits and backgrounds to pressure senators who had budgetary power to give more money to military operations. So Hastings, when he started digging in and making the connections, specifically to Brennan, the CIA director, he was connecting Brennan to my report to Birkenfeld. That was when he was killed off by a thermite charge, I'm told, in his car.
Yeah, or maybe it was some sort of remotely controlled apparatus.
Well, the only thing that was funny was the fire in the car wasn't going out. And military experts who've seen that have told me that was a thermite charge because nothing would burn like that.
Certainly.
No gasoline at all. That was an artificial military grade weapon.
It has its own oxygen supply.
Yep. And there's the other 9/11 tell. Oh, okay, now we got 9/11 thermite charge melting metal and pouring out the sides of a World Trade Center. Yeah, that was plane fuel.
Yeah. Before I forget, I've been past Gordon's email information. David would like you to get in contact with him, see if there's anything that he has that can help you in your fight or study or whatever.
Yeah, I would appreciate it very much. I mean, I anticipate this to be a great battle arena, like the Ben-Hur chariot race, finally get my chance to come back in and expose all this and bring it all back into court and subpoena all the parties. Subpoena Dov Zakheim, Brad Birkenfeld. Subpoena, even by video conference, Edward Snowden and Julian Assange.
Right.
To bring in everybody who's connected with me and Birkenfeld, because our information, our stories were connected before we were in prison. And then when we met in prison, that's where we put it all together. So taking this back to the court to say, this is what happened before, and this is what I learned after, and it's a clear violation of justice. It's a clear skullduggerous conspiratorial operation that warrants a full-on congressional investigation.
Yeah. Well, I just popped that email in the Skype chat there for you.
Got it.
So I wanted to mention also, you've mentioned Veterans Today.
Yes.
I've actually had Professor Jim Svetzer on.
Oh, yeah.
Twice, and I've had James Tracy on once.
Yep.
They do a lot of work for Veterans Today. And I think they're a pretty good organization.
I do,
and
too.
I've had Dr. Judy Wood on twice on the show. You know, she has a lot of interesting evidence out there.
I'd seen some of Judy Wood's material, and I heard, you know, a little bit about the possibilities of some sort of nuclear device that
or directed energy,
may have been part of the arsenal that was utilized. That is the crime in itself, that whole geography, that whole 5 acres wasn't roped up with yellow police tape as a crime scene.
Right, right.
The fact that that happened and that was all shipped off to China.
But they had the trucks waiting off on the other side of the bridge just before the event happened. Giuliani had the 200 plus trucks, dump trucks, ready at the waiting.
Yeah. Well, you know what's real funny? Giuliani, the same game that he played, he was prosecutor of a bank, and I've got all this wrote down. He prosecuted a bank that was doing terrorist financing. He then quit as a prosecutor and joined the law firm that defended that bank.
Yeah.
Lanny Brewer and Eric Holder did exactly the same thing.
That they did.
Working for Covington and Burling, who represented Union Bank of Switzerland. Then they left and joined the Obama administration. And then Birkenfeld comes over with a treasure trove of Swiss banking counterterrorism intelligence. And Lanny Brewer and Eric Holder took all the documents, buried them, and gagged and threw Birkenfeld in jail and let UBS go on its way. And now they've returned. Lanny Brewer went back to that law firm. Michael Chertoff is at that law firm. Eric Holder has gone on to JP Morgan, I think, and he's making like $70 million a year. someone who reported that.
Yeah.
Susan Lindauer had some interesting stories on that.
Yeah.
So they play this game, but it's such an obscene conflict of interest or abuse of government authority that it can't be unchecked. And, you know, that's what the courts are for. That's what people can file lawsuits for. You've got standing. If you've lost a son or daughter in the military uniform, by God, you use my material to bolster and make an argument for yourself. I mean, that's the whole all the military families that are suing the banks, the Iranian banks that were funding terrorism. The same can be applied to the Swiss bank and everything else. I would encourage anybody who wants the documentation to read up on it, to become empowered, to challenge your members of Congress and anyone else. They can get it from my website, and that's www.armypsyop.wix.com/Scott Bennett.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got the link.
I do. I just wanted to mention, I guess you were just about ready to wrap up there, and I was too. You, as being a PSYOP officer, you do know that They have to tell us the truth, but in the best disinformation that can be handed out, there is some truth. Even though there is a lot of disinformation, there is some truth that they have to tell you.
Well, it's funny when you look back on the congressional testimony of guy who, I can't remember his name at the right second, but he got up and he said, you know, he's questioned, does the NSA spy on Americans? And he said, not willingly. Clapper.
Right.
Clapper, who also was a Booz Allen Hamilton man, by the way, in addition to Panetta and Kissinger.
Yeah.
But he said, not willingly.
Yeah.
Not wittingly. Now, what he's really saying is, we don't do it, but we give the Israeli Mossad all the technology and all the access.
That's right.
And they do it,
then
they just kind of slip it under our door.
And they pay. And they pay some of these technology corporations that the people are willingly giving over information on social media, just all types of mediums. Americans are just giving away the information. They don't have to sneak around anymore because it's being given to them.
Well, this is a chance for Americans to kind of to stand up on their own two feet and call into question all these people. I might add one thing I forgot to mention was, you know, never trust anyone. Never trust but verify, and never trust any of these people who are standing up saying they represent whistleblowers or any of this stuff, because a lot of them are liars and they're into their own money and their own reputation, or they're being paid off by CIA or other groups. And one in particular is Glenn Greenwald and his assistant, Andrew Fishman. I contacted them. Again, all of my actions are not motivated by anything other than my oath as a military officer and as an American.
Well, that's the big conspiracy. Greenwald has CIA ties.
He does. Well, I contacted him and his assistant, Andrew Fishman, and said, when are you going to expose the documentation that links Brad Birkenfeld to the Union Bank of Switzerland, CIA black operations, and all this other material, and Snowden? When are you going to link Snowden to Birkenfeld?
Yep.
Because I have proof that Snowden was the CIA agent, intel guy in Geneva, when Brad Birkenfeld was targeted by the CIA in a drunk driving operation.
Huh, wow.
It was a sting.
Yeah.
And Andrew Fishman.
I lost your audio, Scott.
Oh,
there it goes. There you go. Okay.
He said, do you have proof on that connection between Birkenfeld and Snowden? I said, absolutely, I've got proof. Documentation and testimony from Birkenfeld himself and others who he gave that material to. And I didn't hear from from Andrew Fishman or Glenn Greenwald ever again after that. So that told me that they knew perfectly well that Birkenfeld and Snowden were connected. They didn't want it known for some reason. And then you read everything else, and Greenwald is not releasing anything that supposedly Snowden gave him. He's giving it out in little spurts. But you know, these people are showing their true colors, and it is not in the interest of the United States. And I even say, I mean, there's a lot of talk about Snowden in his, I knew him from the Booz Allen Hamilton days. I knew he and his bosses and everybody, because I worked with them in Hawaii and the NSA route. I mean, we're all connected through the McLean office, and I knew everything that he was doing. And it surprised me and stuck with me that none of his material was just being completely poured out, and it's been restrained. Part of it was, I think, the record shows the materials that I sent out were bouncing around the military and intelligence channels, the TSSEI network and the secret networks, which were basically my reports, and they were being analyzed. And Snowden saw the reports, and he saw Birkenfeld, and he recognized Birkenfeld connecting with him in Geneva. And it was within 2 months after that that he contacted Laura Potras and went public with all this stuff. But they've still never exposed Snowden's connection with Birkenfeld.
Right.
And I'm hopeful when he goes to France, Brad is going to talk about that. But if not, I'm going to be walking right up behind him and presenting all the information that I was given to the French authorities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, doggone it. Last night, I already told you that I was very, very interested in having you on more than just this one time. And I do want to extend that invitation. I'm a little bit pressed for time tonight. Otherwise, I would have been on for 2 hours plus.
Well, anytime, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm more than happy to return in the future and talk about any of this and other material. So I applaud you for being strong and bold enough to have this show. And I hope it blesses your listeners.
Yes, I hope so, too. I've also been told by David that you need to definitely get a hold of Gordon there at his email. He can definitely help you. So
I will. Thank you.
Scott Bennett, thank you once again for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, and have a good night. I will be talking to you soon. All right, everyone. That's the end of my show here. I am pressed for time, so I'm just going to pop a song on and say goodnight to everyone. I'm Stephen Robertson. This has been Against the Looking Ball. Thank you, everyone, and see you next Wednesday.